Audio extracts from book, Nuclear War, of Ann Jacobson, plus intro. Nuclear War, A Scenario is a 2024 non-fiction book by American journalist Annie Jacobson. It outlines a timeline of a hypothetical first strike against the continental United States by North Korea. Summary, in the book, the war begins with North Korea first launching a surprise ICBM towards Washington, D.C., shortly followed by a second surprise nuclear missile launched from a North Korean submarine towards the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant in California. The United States tries but fails to stop both warheads. Both missiles hit their respective targets. The United States then decides to retaliate against North Korea, but in order to counterattack quickly enough, the United States nuclear arsenal needs to fly over the North Pole and therefore over Russian airspace. At the time of sending missiles over Russian airspace, Russia is not yet a target. The United States desperately tries to contact Russian leadership to notify them that the end target is North Korea, not Russia, but is unable to properly make contact and warn Russia before the American ICBMs are flying over Russia. Russia interprets ICBMs flying over their airspace as an attack on Russia and decides to launch over 900 nuclear warheads of its own towards targets in the United States. The United States sees these Russian missiles on scanners and then decides to launch the rest of the American warhead stockpile at Russia, along with NATO allies launching all of their nuclear weapons at mostly Russian targets as well, therefore effectively killing hundreds of millions of people in a matter of hours. Content: the book covers standard American military protocol in the event of a nuclear first strike against the United States. It particularly highlights launch on warning as a dangerous and potentially catastrophic policy of nuclear-armed nations and concludes that any nuclear conflict has the potential to end in near-total human extinction. The book first discusses the Single Integrated Operational Plan, from a witness account by John H. Rubel, who detailed that in 1960, American military officials planned for a potential preemptive nuclear attack on the Soviet Union which would kill at least 600 million people, around half of whom would be from the Soviet Union's neighboring countries. Rubel said that the United States' top military officials lauded the plan, with only General David M. Shoup dissenting. The book then shows a minute-by-minute breakdown from multiple perspectives of a scenario in 2024 where nuclear world war erupts. In minute zero, North Korea unleashes a surprise attack, launching a Hwasong-17 ICBM with a 1-megaton thermonuclear warhead at the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. The United States immediately detects the threat, but has no system to eliminate the North Korean ICBM during its boost phase when satellites still can detect it. U.S. long-range missile defenses consist of 44 interceptor missiles, of which 4 are fired from California at the Hwasong, but all miss in minute 9. The American president's evacuation delays the American nuclear response. By minute 16, North Korea launches a Pukguksong-1 SLBM with a thermonuclear warhead from 350 miles from California, but the United States' short-range missile defenses, Aegis and THAAD, were deployed too far from it to interfere. By minute 23, the North Korean SLBM successfully strikes the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant in California, causing a nuclear meltdown. In minute 24, the U.S. initiates a nuclear attack on North Korea after the American president's approval, but due to a lack of traveling range, the American Minuteman III ICBMs must fly over Russia to reach North Korea. The North Korean ICBM obliterates Washington, D.C. in minute 33, stranding and incapacitating the American president while he is being evacuated. Within the next 10 minutes, Russia's flawed Tundra satellite system overestimates U.S. 50-Minuteman ICBMs and 8 Trident SLBMs to number in the hundreds, enough to devastate Russia. Having not heard from the American president and aware of the United States' past lies during wartime, the paranoid Russian president believes that the U.S. has launched against Russia. By minute 45, the Russian president orders an all-out attack on it and perceived hostile countries in NATO and Europe. In minute 50, The US detect the impending Russian attack and launches its own all-out nuclear attack on 975 targets in Russia. From minute 52, North Korea is struck by 82 American nuclear warheads. At minute 55, North Korea detonates a nuclear warhead in a satellite orbiting 300 miles above the United States, generating an electromagnetic pulse that cripples its power grids, microprocessors and SCADA systems. At minute 57, Russian SLBMs destroy the American nuclear warfighting facilities and overwhelm the nuclear bunker at Raven Rock Mountain Complex, killing the nearby American president. At minute 58, European countries including Albania, Belgium, Bulgaria, Croatia, Estonia, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Italy, Netherlands, Norway, Sweden, Turkey, Ukraine and the United Kingdom are struck by Russian nuclear warheads. By minute 92 of the conflict, the United States has been struck by around 1,000 more Russian nuclear warheads. By this time, hundreds of millions of people have been killed. The nuclear war ends less than 2 hours after it began, leaving most of the Northern Hemisphere decimated and uninhabitable. The nuclear conflict causes fires that trigger nuclear winter, preventing agriculture and killing plants, upending food chains. Small animals thrive, while larger animals are nearly wiped out. Humanity experiences widespread famine, with few exceptions including the southernmost countries of Australia, New Zealand, Argentina and parts of Paraguay. Nuclear fallout causes radiation poisoning. After months, as nuclear winter ends, the ozone layer, damaged by nuclear war, fails to shield life from the sun's ultraviolet rays, forcing humanity to live underground, while insects and plagues from thawing corpses spread above ground. The Earth itself takes 24,000 years to recover from nuclear war, while humanity's fate is unmentioned. The author concludes that the AOE Namir was no country or group, but nuclear weapons. Conclusions. Jacobson has said you would want to have a commander-in-chief who is of sound mind, who is fully in control of his mental capacity, who is not volatile, who is not subject to anger. These are significant character qualities that should be thought about when people vote for president, for the simple reason that the president has sole authority to launch nuclear weapons. One adaptation. In April 2024, it was announced that production studio Legendary Entertainment purchased the rights to adapt the book into a film, with Canadian director Denis Villeneuve set to direct. Publication history. Book from 2024. Reception. Barry Duan, in the New York Times, said of nuclear war, a scenario that Jacobson, the author of AO the Pentagon a TMS Brain, A has done her homework. She has spent more than a decade interviewing dozens of experts while mastering the voluminous literature on the subject, some of it declassified only in recent years. However, he does raise a question, stating that if she favors abolishing nuclear weapons altogether, she owes it to her readers to say so, and then explain how it could be done. How do we get from here to there? Interviewing Jacobson herself, Kathy Gilsonan of Politico writes that nuclear war would be bad. Everyone knows this. Most people would probably rather not think through the specifics. But Annie Jacobson, an author of 7 books on sensitive national security topics, wants you to know exactly how bad it would be. Mike Riggs, writing for Reason magazine, wrote that the book is a disaster porn thriller. In a more mixed case, Stephen Poole of The Telegraph praises the book for its factual basis and research, but criticizes the prose as being overblown, remarking that in terms of style, Nuclear War appears to have been written for those who find the novels of Dan Brown too sophisticated. Pulp thrillerish one-sentence paragraphs abound. However, he concludes on a positive note, appraising it as a more accessible and deeper compendium of the unsettling facts about nuclear history, planning, and devastation. In contrast, Peter Hwesi of Global Security Review has an almost entirely negative appraisal of the work, remarking that although there are additional areas where Jacobson incorporates inaccurate information into her scenario, the point is clear. Annie Jacobson at TMS Nuclear War, A scenario would be far more accurately titled, Nuclear War, a novel or Nuclear War, Disarmament Propaganda. Prologue, Hell on Earth. Washington, D.C., possibly sometime in the near future. A 1 megaton thermonuclear weapon detonation begins with a flash of light and heat so tremendous it is impossible for the human mind to comprehend. 180 million degrees Fahrenheit is 4 or 5 times hotter than the temperature that occurs at the center of the Earth at EMS Sun. In the first fraction of a millisecond after this thermonuclear bomb strikes the Pentagon outside Washington, D.C., there is light. Soft X-ray light with a very short wavelength. The light superheats the surrounding air to millions of degrees, creating a massive fireball that expands at millions of miles per hour. Within a few seconds, this fireball increases to a diameter of a little more than a mile, 5,700 feet across, its light and heat so intense that concrete surfaces explode, metal objects melt or evaporate, stone shatters, humans instantaneously convert into combusting carbon. The five-story, five-sided structure of the Pentagon and everything inside its 6.5 million square feet of office space explodes into superheated dust from the initial flash of light and heat, all the walls shattering with the near simultaneous arrival of the shockwave, all 27,000 employees perishing instantly. Not a single thing in the fireball remains. Nothing. Ground zero is zeroed. Traveling at the speed of light, the radiating heat from the fireball ignites everything flammable within its line of sight several miles out in every direction. Curtains, paper, books, wood fences, people EMS clothing, dry leaves explode into flames and become kindling for a great firestorm that begins to consume a 100 or more square mile area that, prior to this flash of light, was the beating heart of American governance and home to some 6 million people. Several hundred feet northwest of the Pentagon, all 639 acres of Arlington National Cemetery, including the 400,000 sets of bones and gravestones honoring the war dead, the 3,800 African American free people buried in Section 27, the living visitors paying respects on this early spring afternoon, the groundskeepers mowing the lawns, the arborists tending to the trees, the tour guides touring, the white-gloved members of the old guard keeping watch over the tomb of the unknowns who are instantly transformed into combusting and charred human figurines. Into black organic matter powder that is soot. Those incinerated are spared the unprecedented horror that begins to be inflicted on the 1 to 2 million more gravely injured people not yet dead in this first bolt out of the blue nuclear strike. Across the Potomac River 1 mile to the northeast, the marble walls and columns of the Lincoln and Jefferson Memorials superheat, split, burst apart, and disintegrate. The steel and stone bridges and highways connecting these historic monuments to the surrounding environs heave and collapse. To the south, across Interstate 395, the bright and spacious glass-walled Fashion Center at Pentagon City, with its abundance of stores filled with high-end clothing brands and household goods, and the surrounding restaurants and offices, along with the adjacent Ritz-Carlton, Pentagon City Hotel, they are all obliterated. Ceiling joists, 2x4s, escalators, chandeliers, rugs, furniture, mannequins, dogs, squirrels, people burst into flames and burn. It is the end of March, 3:36 p.m. local time. It has been 3 seconds since the initial blast. There is a baseball game going on 2.5 miles due west of Nationals Park. The clothes on a majority of the 35,000 people watching the game catch on fire. Those who don't use TMT quickly burn to death, suffer intense third-degree burns. Their bodies get stripped of the outer layer of skin, exposing bloody dermis underneath. Third-degree burns require immediate specialized care and often limb amputation to prevent death. Here inside Nationals Park there might be a few thousand people who somehow survive initially. They were inside buying food, or using the bathrooms indoors, so people who now desperately need a bed at a burn treatment center. but there are only 10 specialized burn beds in the entire Washington metropolitan area, at the MedStar Washington Hospital TMS Burn Center in central D.C. and because this facility is about 5 miles northeast of the Pentagon, it no longer functions, if it even exists. At the Johns Hopkins Burn Center, 45 miles northeast, in Baltimore, there are less than 20 specialized burn beds, but they all are about to become filled. In total, there are only around 2,000 specialized burn unit beds in all 50 states at any given time. Within seconds, thermal radiation from this 1 megaton nuclear bomb attack on the Pentagon has deeply burned the skin on roughly 1 million more people, 90% of whom will die. Defense scientists and academics alike have spent decades doing this math. Most won at EMT make it more than a few steps from where they happen to be standing when the bomb detonates. They become what civil defense experts referred to in the 1950s, when these gruesome calculations first came to be, as AO dead when found. A U.S. Federal Civil Defense Administration. At the Joint Base in Anacostia Bowling, a 1,000-acre military facility across the Potomac to the southeast, there are another 17,000 victims, including almost everyone working at the Defense Intelligence Agency headquarters, the White House Communications Agency headquarters, the U.S. Coast Guard Station Washington, the Marine One helicopter hangar, and scores of other heavily guarded federal facilities that cater to the national TMS security. At the National Defense University, a majority of the 4,000 students attending are dead or dying. With no shortness of tragic irony, this university, funded by the Pentagon and founded on America TMS 200th birthday, is where military officers go to learn how to use U.S. military tactics to achieve U.S. national security dominance around the world. This university is not the only military-themed higher learning institution obliterated in the nuclear first strike. The Eisenhower School for National Security and Resource Strategy, the National War College, the Inter-American Defense College, the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, they all immediately ceased to exist. This entire waterfront area, from Buzzard Point Park to St. Augustine TMS Episcopal Church, from the Navy Yard to the Frederick Douglass Memorial Bridge, is totally destroyed. Humans created the nuclear weapon in the 20th century to save the world from evil, and now, in the 21st century, the nuclear weapon is about to destroy the world. To burn it all down, the science behind the bomb is profound. Embedded in the thermonuclear flash of light are two pulses of thermal radiation. The first pulse lasts a fraction of a second, after which comes the second pulse, which lasts several seconds, and causes human skin to ignite and burn. The light pulses are silent, light has no sound. What follows is a thunderous roar that is blast. The intense heat generated by this nuclear explosion creates a high-pressure wave that moves out from its center point like a tsunami, a giant wall of highly compressed air traveling faster than the speed of sound. It mows people down, hurls others into the air, bursts lungs and eardrums, sucks bodies up and spits them out. AO in general, large buildings are destroyed by the change in air pressure, while people and objects such as trees and utility poles are destroyed by the wind, A notes an archivist who compiles these appalling statistics for the Atomic Archive. As the nuclear fireball grows, this shock front delivers catastrophic destruction, pushing out like a bulldozer and moving 3 miles farther ahead. The air behind the blast wave accelerates, creating several hundred mile per hour winds, extraordinary speeds that are difficult to fathom. In 2012, Hurricane Sandy, which did $70 billion in damage and killed some 147 people, had maximum sustained winds of roughly 80 miles per hour. The highest wind speed ever recorded on Earth was 253 miles per hour, at a remote weather station in Australia. This nuclear blast wave in Washington, D.C., destroys all structures in its immediate path, instantly changing the physical shapes of engineered structures including office buildings, apartment complexes, monuments, museums, parking structure so they disintegrate and become dust. That which is not crushed by blast is torn apart by whipping wind. Buildings collapse, bridges fall, cranes topple over. Objects as small as computers and cement blocks, and as large as 18-wheeler trucks and double-decker tour buses, become airborne like tennis balls. The nuclear fireball that has been consuming everything in the initial 1.1 mile radius now rises up like a hot air balloon. Up from the Earth it floats, at a rate of 250 to 350 feet per second. 35 seconds pass. The formation of the iconic mushroom cloud begins, its massive cap and stem, made up of incinerated people and civilization or TMS debris, transmutes from a red, to a brown, to an orange hue. Next comes the deadly reverse suction effect, with objects such as cars, people, light poles, street signs, parking meters, steel carrier beams are getting sucked back into the center of the burning inferno and consumed by flame. 60 seconds pass. The mushroom cap and stem, now grayish white, rises up 5 then 10 miles from ground zero. The cap grows too, stretching out 10, 20, 30 miles across, billowing and blowing farther out. Eventually it reaches beyond the troposphere, higher than commercial flights go, and the region where most of the Earth's TMS weather phenomena occurs. Radioactive particles spew across everything below as fallout raining back down on the Earth and its people. A nuclear bomb produces a Witcher TMS brew of radioactive products which are also entrained in the cloud, and the astrophysicist Carl Sagan warned decades ago. More than 1 million people are dead or dying and less than 2 minutes have passed since detonation. Now the inferno begins. This is different from the initial fireball, it is a mega fire beyond measure. Gas lines explode one after the next, acting like giant blowtorches or flamethrowers, spewing steady streams of fire. Tanks containing flammable materials burst open. Chemical factories explode. Pilot lights on water heaters and furnaces act like torch lighters, setting anything not already burning alight. Collapsed buildings become like giant ovens. People, everywhere, burn alive. Open gaps in floors and roofs behave like chimneys. Carbon dioxide from the firestorm sinks down and settles into the metro or TMS subway tunnels, asphyxiating riders in their seats. People seeking shelter in basements and other spaces below ground vomit, convulse, become comatose, and die. Anyone above ground who is looking directly at the blaster, in some cases as far as 13 miles away, becomes blinded. 7.5 miles out from ground zero, in a 15-mile diameter ring around the Pentagon, the 5 pounds per square inch zone, cars and buses crash into one another. Asphalt streets turn to liquid from the intense heat, trapping survivors as if caught in molten lava or quicksand. Hurricane-force winds fuel hundreds of fires into thousands of fires, into millions of them. 10 miles out, hot burning ash and flaming wind-borne debris ignite new fires, and one after another they continue to conflate. All of Washington, D.C., becomes one complex firestorm, a mega-inferno. Soon to become a mesocyclone of fire. 8, maybe 9 minutes, pass. 10 and 12 miles out from ground zero, in the 1 pound per square inch zone, survivors shuffle in shock like the almost dead. Unsure of what just happened, desperate to escape. Tens of thousands of people here have ruptured lungs. Crows, sparrows, and pigeons flying overhead catch on fire and drop from the sky as if it is raining birds. There is no electricity. No phone service. No 911. The localized electromagnetic pulse of the bomb obliterates all radio, internet, and TV. Cars with electric ignition systems in a several-mile ring outside the blast zone cannot restart. Water stations can't EMT pump water. Saturated with lethal levels of radiation. The entire area is a no-go zone for first responders. Not for days will the rare survivors realize help was never on the way. Those who somehow manage to escape death by the initial blast, shockwave, and firestorm suddenly realize an insidious truth about nuclear war. That they are entirely on their own. Former FEMA director Craig Fugate tells us their only hope for survival is to figure out how to self-survive. A that here begins a fight for food, water, Pedialyte. A how, and why, do US defense scientists know such hideous things, and with exacting precision? How does the US government know so many nuclear effects or related facts, while the general public remains blind? The answer is as grotesque as the questions themselves because, for all these years, since the end of World War II, the US government has been preparing for, and rehearsing plans for, a general nuclear war. A nuclear World War III that is guaranteed to leave, at minimum, 2 billion dead. To know this answer more specifically, we go back in time, more than 60 years, to December 1960. To U.S. Strategic Air Command, and a secret meeting that took place there. Part 1, The Build-Up, or, How We Got Here, SAC Headquarters, Underground Command Post, the AEBIGBOARD.A view in early 1957. U.S. Air Force Historical Research Agency. From Chapter 1, the room was located underground. Walls more than 150 feet long, several stories tall, with an overhead glass enclosed balcony on the second floor. There were banks of desks, telephones, and maps. Panels of maps. A whole wall of maps. Strategic Air Command headquarters in Omaha, Nebraska, was where generals and admirals would run nuclear war when it happened. True then, true now in 2024A with the Underground Command Center updated for 21st century nuclear war. Everything you are about to learn of this meeting comes from a first-hand witness of someone who was actually in the room that dire a business executive turned defense official named John H. Rubel. In 2008, in his late 80s, a few years before he died, Rubel revealed this information in a short memoir. As Rubel prepared for his own death, he summoned the courage to express a long-repressed truth. That he felt remorse for having participated in such a Heart of Darkness a plan. For saying nothing for so many decades after the fact. What he was part of, Rubel wrote, was a plan for a mass extermination. Are his words. Inside the large underground bunker in Nebraska that day, Rubel was seated alongside his fellow nuclear war planners in neat rows of folding chairs. The old-fashioned kind with wooden slats. The four-star generals sat in the front row, the one-star generals in the back. Rubel, U.S. Deputy Director of Defense Research and Engineering at the time, sat in the second row. On a signal from Strategic Air Command Commander General Thomas S. Power, a briefer stepped forward on stage. Then an aide appeared carrying an easel, and a second aide carrying a pointing stick. The first man was there to flip charts. The second to point things out. General Power, his actual name, explained to his audience that what was being witnessed was how full-scale nuclear attack against the Soviet Union would go down. Two airmen walked forward and stood one at each end of the 150-foot-long wall of maps, each man carrying a tall stepladder. The map showed the Soviet Union and China, then called the Sino-Soviet bloc, and the surrounding countries. Rubel recalled, each man climbed his tall ladder at the same brisk rate, reaching the top at the same instant as his counterpart. Each man reached up toward a red ribbon which, we now noticed, encircled a large roll of clear plastic. With a single motion, each untied the bow knot securing the ribbon at his end of the roll, whereupon the plastic sheet unrolled with a whoosh. Flapped a bit and then dangled limply in front of the map. The map showed hundreds of small black marks, most of them over Moscow, each one representing a nuclear explosion. The first of General Power at EMS briefers began to describe the US nuclear attack plan against the Soviet Union. The first wave of attacks would come from US fighter jets that would take off from aircraft carriers stationed near Okinawa, Japan. A wave after wave of attacks would ensue,